This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
There's a Manchester derby coming our way. Jesse Marsh's debut with Leeds United. A soon-to-be-sold Chelsea against Burnley. First versus second in Serie A. MLS action and much, much more. We got the West Coast with Jimmy Conrad and Heath Beers. And Paris with Jonathan Johnson. Qué golazo. Weekend preview begins right now. Everybody, welcome to Qué Golazo. Thank you so much for being part of the family. Qué Golazo pod on Twitter, youtube.com/Qué Golazo. Anywhere you listen to your pods, thank you for sharing the word, all the lovely comments that we have received throughout the last few months, the last year and a half, etc. We thank you so much. And what a team. I have missed them. I feel like we haven't done this in a while all together. Jimmy Conrad, what's up, buddy?
What's up, everybody? Great to see everybody's beautiful faces. And if I can't see you, I know that you're beautiful. And also, I got the call-in. I'm not going to be part of Sunday's recap because I'm going to Stamford, Connecticut to be part of the Serie A crew on Paramount Plus, and I'm absolutely buzzing.
I love it, my friend. I love it. You'll be so close to me, yet so far, Jimmy. But hey, we wish you the best with the Serie A team, my friend. Heath Beers, what's up, man?
Just trying to recover now from Jimmy's humble brag that he's getting the call up. It's like, the team sheet comes out, you're not on it. So you just kind of keep your head down, keep working.
That's but how I'm it good used otherwise. To be, too. He's yeah. never for the national yeah. team as well.
It never changes, but I'm good otherwise.
Hey, both of you, you can join the line, Heath Beers. I never get the call. It's an anti-Peruvian thing. Jonathan Johnson, what's up, buddy? How are you?
Hey there, guys. Great to be back on with you. Doing well, thanks. Obviously, busy week for everyone and just about over halfway, but great to be back with you all.
Absolutely. Miss you, everybody. Thank you so much for being part of the family. The games continue here. And of course, this is our weekend preview. There's a lot to discuss. Let's begin with the Manchester derby, Man City against Manchester United. You know what? It wasn't so long ago, everybody, where we thought Man City have this in the bag. They've done it. And look at this table. It really isn't that far-fetched now to think that Liverpool could overtake, especially as both will face each other later next month. But Jimmy, let's begin with you. Man City against Manchester United. The Times reports, by the way, that Manchester United players are questioning Harry Maguire's place in the team. What do you think of that?
They're like fans. They're like the rest of us. That's what I love. That's what I think of first. What I will say is that United have remarkably, and I want to highlight the word remarkably, won three straight at the Etihad. I just don't know if they're going to do it for a fourth time. But I guess I never really thought they were going to win the last three, and they figured out a way to get the job done. I don't know if this is a bit of a bogey team for Man City, that there's just maybe too much hype around it, that we've seen them have leads on United in this fixture before, and then all of a sudden Pogba works his magic or somebody does something special. Cristiano Ronaldo obviously was being courted by Man City, got the call from Sir Alex Ferguson, decided to go back to United. There's a lot of intrigue here. Now, City didn't look great against Peterborough in the FA Cup midweek, but I don't know. Them getting 2-0 wins still pretty solid despite how they play. Jack Grealish hitting the back of the net, I think, is super important. And the City's so good. They're so good. And they have to know, and Pep's come out and said it, that we have to be perfect from here on out, ultimately. I'm paraphrasing, but that we have to go out there and perform. Like, every single game is going to be like the last game of the season, which is a nice cliche that a lot of coaches use. So this one's going to be a fantastic game. I'm really looking forward to it. I just want to say very quickly about Ralf Rangnick. When I look back, and I went back and I watched a lot of the games, just the highlights, not like
how many did you watch?
I went back like three or four games, and a lot of the games where they didn't get results, and they create so many chances. When you look at their game against Watford at home, they created so many chances. Bruno doesn't hit the back of the net. Ronaldo doesn't hit the back of the net. Ilanga's got some good chances. He always finds himself in good spots. And at some point, it can't be on Rangnick the whole time.
I mean, it's not his fault. I think we can get to that.
He's getting clean sheets. He's getting clean sheets. And his team has created opportunities. And I don't know what else, as a fan, you want. I mean, yeah, it could always be aesthetically pleasing in different ways. But I actually think Rangnick's doing an okay job, but the problem is they've got a really tough schedule coming up.
Yeah,
I mean, how badly do you like to punish yourself, like going back and watching some of United's matches from the last couple of months?
I'm a masochist, JJ. I'm a masochist.
So I went back and I watched every one of their games just to be able to comment on this.
I just want to make sure
it was a thesis that Ralph Rangnick wrote in university. I decided to read it. But Heath, what do you say? Because listen, to that point, it's not Rangnick's fault. No, I don't think so at this point. Something has to be done here. This is a talented Manchester United team. Of course, it's not the 90s United. They're not as good as Liverpool, Man City, etc. But still, to Jimmy's point, you know, they're doing everything they can, keeping a clean sheet, etc. But, you know, now they're hosting, they're visiting Manchester City. What do you expect here?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Grealish and Gabriel Jesus are supposed to be back. I think it's interesting in the context of everything right now, because Manchester United, as Jimmy mentioned, have such a difficult schedule coming up, but they are undefeated and 8 in the league. Now, if I was a betting man, which I am, I just saw the lines come up on the screen, and Des, if you can throw this back up, I would just go with the +750 for Man United. Obviously, as Jimmy mentioned, they've won last three, and obviously, I think statistics like winning the last three at the Etihad don't always play because you got such a different team. Ronaldo has been notoriously overworked in the team, and that's difficult to keep a player from punishing themselves in the way that he does because he wants to play every single match. But you know, Raheem Sterling's also on a dry spell right now, but it's just one of those matchups where I'm like, man, United, like Jimmy said, you watch them sometimes, you go, man, they could be so good, but the end results never seem to really be there against the Man City side. And now the gap is small in the league, and Liverpool are back in it. And this is going to have to be one where they're just going to have to be more comprehensive against the Man United side that I don't think is going to be blown out of this game. And certainly if they can find a clinical finisher or ability to finish, could stay in this.
I mean, I think when you've got the quality that United have individually, there's always the possibility that they're going to click every now and then. And when they do, you know, it's pretty impressive. I mean, I've seen it happen a couple of times in Paris in front of my own eyes, you know, and that group of players can come together and create some pretty special football from time to time. It just doesn't happen often enough, you know, certainly not to meet the expectations of the fans, you know, and you know, perhaps not to justify the large amounts of money that have been spent on them. I agree it can't all be put on Rangnick, but also at the same time, I mean, when you look at what sort of Rangnick's trying to achieve, we always knew that it was going to be, you have to make some sort of long-term commitment with Rangnick for it to really work. And, you know, if he gets the opportunity to stay on sort of shaping that squad sort of off the pitch, you know, then obviously there's the chance that he could come away from Old Trafford being a success some point in the next couple of years. But I'm not sure that it's necessarily the right call to keep him on as manager, you know, and we're still in this same situation that we've been in since Solskjaer left, which is, you know, really who long-term is going to be taking over this team, shaping them, getting them to play the way that they want them to play. Because yes, there are some players who arguably need to be moved on, sort of, you know, bearing in mind their influence on the squad, you know, perhaps not got the best mentalities. You know, we're talking about pretty much a geriatric Cristiano Ronaldo now as well. You know, there are elements of sort of dead wood to this squad, or players that just are not going to be around for the next couple of years. But also at the same time, you know, until United actually answer that question, right, this guy is going to be our coach for sort of the next 3 to 5 years. You know, we're always going to be in this situation where we're looking at it, sort of analyzing them, being like, yeah, you know, they're perhaps not at their best under Rangnick, but, you know, also we know that he's not going to be the guy long term.
You know what I can't wait for is when at the end of this whole thing, the season ends, wherever they finish. He's got some time to think about it over the summer. Who are they going to hire? And Rangnick goes, you know what? I think I'm just going to do it. I'll just, you know what? I'll take it. Don't worry, everybody. We've got it all situated. The players know me now. We don't need to bring anybody new. I can't wait for a transfer window. It's going to be amazing. And the internet's going to melt because Man United fans are going to be up in arms. Now, with regard to value, I just want to say quickly on the bets, +750 for United to win straight up is pretty significant. And the last time we kind of looked at things like that, we had Tottenham going to play City. I'm like, +1,000. Well, who's going to do that? Like, they're going to get crushed against Man City and they end up winning. So take that into consideration. But the draw actually looks kind of tasty at +390, because I think that could be, it feels like that could be a more realistic possibility than anything else. But what I was looking at before, I just feel like City are going to be up for this one, knowing the history. Them to win with a clean sheets +127, and with United not really firing in all cylinders, they're really going to have less chances than usual against a very stout City defense. So they're going to have to make the most of those, and they can't even make the most of them when they're playing against Watford. So how are you going to translate that into City? But then Ronaldo does step up in the big games. I don't know. We'll see. And then if you think that United will score and City wins, that's plus 190, which I kind of like a 2-1, 3-1 to Man City.
Yeah, well, a massive narrative here that needs to be talked about, of course, is because Man City looks so good heading into the second leg in the Champions League, they can go all out this weekend, of course. And by the way, when you look at the standings, once again, Man City, 66 points, Liverpool with 60, but they have a game in hand. So Man City and Pep Guardiola need to realize, look, Manchester United, whoever, we need to really take control here. And by the way, Pep Guardiola has only done the double over Manchester United only once. Only once. So he's looking for that second time right now. So take that of what you will. Let's move on. Jesse Marsh takes over Leeds United. A very impressive press conference with Leeds as they look ahead to face Leicester City. I'm not surprised. Jesse Marsh is a smart man, a smart manager. He knows what's at stake. And of course, they need a wake-up call, Leeds United, if they haven't woken up already, because they are staring just above the relegation zone, Heath Pierce. What do you think here as they visit Leicester City, who, by the way, took care of business against Burnley? Jamie Vardy woke up once again.
Yeah, I mean, Jamie Vardy's expected to be back in this one, which I think is going to be a huge challenge for Jesse Marsh. Unfortunately, when it comes to Jesse Marsh, it's like every American, I overthink every single thing they're about to do, as opposed to just treating them like a normal person in the game and just say, oh, he knows what he's doing. Whether he plays a back three or a back four, I'm assuming he'll go with a back four. But it's just about small details. I think wholesale changes. He's starting to get most of his team back fit and healthy with Bamford back in training now. Obviously, I don't think he'll play in this one, but Phillips and Cooper as well coming back into the team. That is a positive sign for him for the coming weeks. However, you can't overlook this match where Jamie Vardy's going to be back in. And it's a lot of it's going to be about details of when you press, when you collapse, when you recover, because they haven't had that. And I think that's going to be the number one factor as to whether or not they can start to shore up their defense. That's conceded four in their last three games in a row.
Now has 20 in February.
Yeah, 20 in February has the worst, I think, goals against. I don't think it's goal difference. I think
ever.
It's goals against.
The worst in the Premier League ever.
Yeah. And so there's going to be certain details. And you can't tell me, similarly, when I look back at what we just talked about with Man United, it's appalling to me when you put a plus 700 or 700 plus line against a team that's full of world-class players. When I look at Leeds, they were getting results before. They did know what they were doing before, yet somehow they've lost a little bit of their way. And so it comes down to that small details. It's not that they can't do it. They don't have the quality. It's about creating that structure again, which we know they didn't have. And so if Jesse Marsh can get in there and just with motivation do two or three things better, I think they can keep themselves in games. Obviously, Leicester City aren't in the best of form either. So there is an opportunity to get 3 points, if not a point out of this one.
I agree with Heath. I do think there's a good opportunity there for Jesse Marsh, and I just think that a new breath of fresh air will do this squad wonders. However, the way that I would approach sort of viewing a coach who's coming in and replacing Marcelo Bielsa, having seen it happen in Ligue 1 with Marseille, having seen what Galtier did at Lille as well, is it's always very risky when you inherit a squad from Marcelo Bielsa and they're absolutely torched after giving everything over a couple of years. And you don't want to have that sort of fatigued squad going into a relegation battle. And I think, you know, it's going to be an uphill fight from the very start for Jesse Marsh. I think he's going to have to get some points on the board as quickly as possible to sort of alleviate some of those relegation fears, especially with some of the teams down there starting to pick up unexpected points. But, you know, I think he's perhaps going to have to be less demanding than he would have been normally, you know, in order to get the maximum out of his players on the pitch sort of between now and the end of the season. You know, really all the mission can be at this moment in time is avoid relegation, you know, get to the summer, you know, get the players rested, you know, and then, you know, start to think about next season. And I think that, you know, if Jesse Marsh tries to sort of install the, you know, the same strong pressing tactics that we've seen from him at Salzburg and that he tried to implement at Leipzig, I think it's going to be tough at Leeds solely because these players are just on their feet a lot of the time at the moment, given what they've, you know, given of themselves over the last couple of years for Bielsa.
What I'll jump in and say, and I'm interested about his first press conference because he either had to answer a question about Ted Lasso or he brought up Ted Lasso. And he said, I think there's probably a stigma against American coaches due to the different culture of the sport in Europe. And I'm not sure Ted Lasso has helped. I haven't watched the show. I don't believe you, Jesse.
Oh, come on.
But I get it. That's what he said.
Oh, Jesse. Like, man,
I don't want to be happy and I'm not having fun, guys.
Look at. And then he went on to say that, you know, how he is. He gives everything he has 100%. And you know, if you believe it, you achieve it. I'm paraphrasing, but then he added, that kind of sounds like Ted Lasso, from what I've heard. Okay, Jesse, we know you've seen the show. So I do think the stigma does work against them a little bit. I know Chris Armas at Manchester United has been called Ted Lasso. And I know that having played with Chris Armas, he has the same type of vibes. Like he just believes in you as a player and believes in you as a teammate. And these are all positive things. So it to be used negatively kind of sucks, but you're only going to be judged on what you can do and how you help the team perform. And he has to get that defense sorted out. And I feel like that he has to work from back to front to, and I wonder, maybe a back four, but without Liam Cooper available, without Calvin Phillips available yet, and Patrick Bamford, who did very well last season to take his chances when they came, I think it's going to be difficult. Those guys are getting closer to coming back, but they're not there yet. And I really think from an attacking standpoint, can Rafinha find space between the lines? I mean, that's really going to make or break, I think, if Leeds can have a lot of success. We know that Leicester have a bit of a leaky defense, but when you got Jamie Vardy playing well, it's really, really, he's so streaky, you know? So it's going to be a tough one. And it's hard. I don't even want to make a bet on this one because I'm so emotionally tied to the success of Jesse Marsh and I want him to do so well. But it'd be hard to go against Leicester at this particular moment, especially knowing where Leeds are. Is there a new manager bounce? Yes, I think that will be there. And I think playing zonal defense over man marking will make a difference. But without those three key players that I mentioned in the spine of the team, it's just going to be hard for him to really execute the way that I think that he wants to.
Well, historically speaking, Leeds are unbeaten in their last five away league games against Leicester. So that helps them. Although to Jonathan Johnson's point, you know, this is post-Bielsa and they're always, you know, rethinking those about their fatigue, etc. I agree with you, Jimmy. I think the zonal part is going to be a massive factor because that old school thinking of man to man takes a hell of a lot out of you. And, you know, at the very least, when you don't have the ball, Leeds, you can do something. I will say this about Jesse Marsh and this stigma. You know, this is a different type of situation and everybody needs to realize it. And obviously you hope Leeds United players realize it. This is a manager that's managed in the Champions League, right? Two teams, two good leagues in Europe and now entering here. This is not just about, oh, he's America. This is a good manager. And everybody needs to remember that. The key thing for me will be something that he said in this press conference, which to me is the biggest highlight of them all, which is like, there are so many complex things that we need to think about with this team right now. All I'm trying to do right now is simplify it. Mm-hmm. Simplify it for everybody. So my thinking is that he's going to do what JJ said at the beginning, which is like, just stay alive. Just stay in the Premier League. Don't try and be sexy. Don't try whatever. Be forceful. Go for every tackle, etc. It's not going to be easy because when you look at that table, right, they're two games over Everton, who are in 17th, one game over Burnley, who are only 2 points under them. So they need to pick up points. So I know you don't want to make a bet because you're emotionally invested, Jimmy Conrad, but
I mean, Jamie Vardy to score first, plus 280. Jamie Vardy to score anytime, minus 133.
So you don't want to give me a result?
I'm hoping for a draw, but I actually think Leicester are one of those teams that I think when they get going and they start to buy into what they're about and with Jamie Vardy healthy and you can finish those chances. I thought Harvey Barnes was fantastic as well. I think Leicester will probably do it, but that's my head. My heart's saying Leeds will get a draw.
All right. Heath?
I think this ends in a draw here. Jesse Marshall, we talk about the stigma, but if the team goes down, he failed.
Mentioned it, Heath, a few weeks ago. Like, is he set up to be the fall guy here? Because he's entering he's not entering preseason. He's entering March.
He is entering March, but he's got enough games. And I'm sure he's been watching.
The eyes of Marsh.
Please, the exits to your right. it's just as simple as if he can do it. I say it's simple. It's not simple. He's in a tough situation, but he took the job. He took the thing. You can't be the fall guy. You need to go in there and do the few things right that he thinks can turn around these results and just keep them up. That is literally it. Yeah. No one's asking you to do anything more than keep them up. So, yeah, I'm going with a draw on this one.
JJ.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I'm fancying a score draw as well. The one thing that I would add to this debate is this is a critical moment for American coaches in the Premier League, because if I'm not mistaken, the last one was Bob Bradley with Swansea, which didn't last long and didn't go particularly well.
Why are you bringing up old stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but this is,
JJ, this could have been worse.
It could have been worse.
But this is a huge opportunity for him. I mean, honestly, I thought that Jesse Marsh would wait it out and see what options were available in the summer. I know that he was sort of on the Lyon shortlist to potentially replace Peter Bosz. Obviously, that won't be happening now. But, you know, when you're sort of talking about sort of like, you know, the Ted Lassoization of coaches coming to Europe now, when they come from the US, especially coming to the Premier League, you know, I think we also have to bear in mind that because of the way that the last experience went with Bob Bradley, you know, there's a lot riding on this now.
Don't forget David Wagner at Huddersfield as well.
Yeah, okay, and Wagner, but, you know, I guess at least he got Huddersfield to the Premier League, which in itself was, you know, a fantastic achievement. So this, when we're talking about sort of him, you know, almost being set up to be the fall guy to fail, you know, there's also a lot to motivate Jesse Marsh going into this situation. And I wouldn't underestimate the power of that, you know, for him to sort of strike a chord with these players, you know, a siege mentality or what have you, and, you know, perhaps get a result early doors. So for me, I'm going to try and look at this one positively. I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw.
Well, so as long as they lose the second game, right, Jonathan Johnson?
Exactly. Well, you know what? Let's go for a Leeds win and then they
put
their feet up the next week.
Hey, just wait until Jesse Marsh has to face Nate West Ham. That's going to be a problem. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Chelsea visiting Burnley. We talked about Burnley, who, by the way, even though they are in the relegation zone, they are picking up points and they do have a game in hand over the aforementioned Leeds United. By the way, check out all our content on the uncertain times at Chelsea. Rob Harris on the sanctions against Russia, Fabrizio Romano on the contractual implications, all Roman Abramovich, of course, and of course, JJ, our very own Jonathan Johnson, on Abramovich's decision to sell the club. But I do want a very quick reaction. And I just, you know, I don't know, Jimmy, like Chelsea's thinking as they, you know, visit Burnley. You've seen Thomas Tuchel already in a press conference. He's just, you know, and naturally so. He's not the owner here, but he is the representative of the club. But you can see his frustration. I wonder how much that influences it as they visit a team that's dying to get out of the relegation zone.
Well, I think he's probably having some moral conflict, maybe on a personal level. He does look a little agitated, not only in answering questions, but probably how complicated it is that he accepts money from Roman Abramovich, and that's who pays his salary. And part of his job is to face the media and answer questions that might be uncomfortable at times, and whether he likes it or not, that's just how it goes. You know, maybe you shouldn't have accepted this poison chalice in some way if you didn't want to sit there and have to answer questions. I'll say that I think that he's very good at blocking out stuff, not necessarily for him, but as he protects his team from some of this. As he mentioned in that press conference, you know, there's a lot of noise out there and it's obviously impacting everybody because we're all humans. They had a game midweek already. They've already kind of played in this situation. They were down to Luton Town 2-1. They found a way to get back into it based on those goal scoring heroes, Timo Werner and Romelu Lukaku.
Well, it was a microcosm of Abramovich, wasn't it? Because like they started the game with average, okay, young players, and then he needed that money. He needed Lukaku, Werner, et cetera, to win. Keep going. I'm sorry.
So no, I just think from a game perspective, Burnley lost to Leicester. Leicester, I thought, were very sharp and good in that particular game. Burnley had some chances. Mm. Chelsea have only won two out of the last six Premier League games away from home. And I don't know. They just figure out a way to make it happen. They still want to stay relevant in the conversation. I don't know about the title race per se, but to at least keep that cushion that they have in third over the competitors that are going for that fourth spot. I'm just going to go right into betting tips. You know, this usually hits about 70% of the time for me. It's a crazy bet. It's Chelsea to win in under 2.5 goals. Thomas Tuchel special, as I call it. That one is plus 230 to go Chelsea to win in under 2.5 goals. If you think they're going to give up a goal and maybe Chelsea win in over 2.5 plus 130 isn't bad either. But I like Chelsea to do the business here, with all due respect to Burnley, who have to have that pluck, right, to try to survive at this point. And have been fighting and actually have had some impressive results as of late. But this Chelsea team, I think, will band together during some adversity and get a result here.
Yeah, I fully agree. I mean, that's sort of my theme. I would love you guys to poke holes in this idea, but they've been under the microscope for everything from Lukaku to the way they play to bouncing back to all these things that, while the Abramovich news is really horrible and it's a really tough situation for Tuchel and the players in the locker room, There's also a bit of a distraction off of who's playing poorly, who their best 11 yeah, and all point. The things. There's no discussion of that. And while you're talking about a major, major issue that's affecting the entire world, it does take a little bit of the attention off of that locker room that can focus on, you know, if you're Tuchel, you're talking about we can control what we can control. And now nobody's really criticizing. Lukaku's not in the conversation. He comes back and scores. They came back from behind two times to get that result. Timo Werner, obviously. I think those are big. Those are little moments, but they're big moments for those players individually who I think have been struggling. So overall, I think there could be some positive to take out of it. Maybe I'm putting two things too extreme together to see the benefit of that. I'm just thinking, trying to see the positive side of something for Chelsea right now. And I think they're too strong for this Burnley side and they're going to get a result. I'm saying a 2-0 win.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I on paper, I think that Chelsea definitely win this. The only thing I would say is that you rarely see Thomas Tuchel flustered, rattled, as you did in the press conference leading up to the Luton clash. And it kind of came across on the pitch from the players for a while. You know, they also looked like, you know, they weren't kind of sure of themselves, were looking a little lost. I mean, maybe that game gets that out of the system for them and they sort of go back to the situation they're in. I agree with Heath. I do think in some ways, you know, this could be a bit of a distraction, gets them, you know, sort of able to sort out some of their issues on the pitch without people really paying too much attention to it. But also at the same time, I mean, we're talking about sort of them wanting to try and stay relevant in this title race. But if you look at the table, I mean, they've still got games in hand. And if we're talking about City potentially being reeled back in if they get a bad result against United, there's still a lot for Chelsea to play for. So I don't think that they can afford, you know, really to take their eye off the ball, let themselves, you know, sort of start asking themselves too many questions, because this could really be an opportunity for them this weekend. Because if United take, you know, even a point from City, you know, that suddenly brings, you know, the potential for Chelsea to get back into the title race that little bit closer. You know, they really, I think, need to try and make the most of those games in hand, you know, make up for the time that they've lost with some of their poor form over the last couple of months. So, you know, for me, I think that this has the potential to either kind of make or break Chelsea in a way, because you don't want to be going up against a team fighting for your life if you're less than 100% sure of yourself. You know, and I think Tuchel will be hoping that they got that out of their system against Luton, who, you know, play a couple of levels below them. And it's, you know, I think that, you know, this chat is not going to go away anytime soon. So they're going to have to get used to it, you know, at least until the end of the season. Who knows, you know, what the future holds beyond then. But, you know, I think that this is Tuchel almost thrives in these kind of situations where it's kind of like an us against the world mentality, you know, and that's more than ever what this situation is for Chelsea right now in terms of what's going on the pitch.
Well, Burnley have won just one of their 15 Premier League games against Chelsea. Chelsea have won 6 of their last 7 away games against Burnley. So maybe something to be said there. Going back to you, JJ, and then going around the table here, Kwa, final thoughts here in the Premier League as we look at the remaining fixtures this weekend. JJ, you go first, buddy.
Well, am I supposed to be looking anywhere other than Villa Park?
Of course not.
No, I mean, I said in the last weekend preview that it was a hugely important match for us going away to Brighton. And if we didn't get the win, we could potentially be dragged into a relegation battle. We did come away with all 3 points. And now Southampton at home. I mean, if we're really serious about finishing in the top half of the table, you know, Southampton are no mugs, obviously, but I think that's another game where, you know, Villa could be looking to make up for lost time and really, you know, should be looking to try and pick up all 3 points and start, you know, this salvage operation from between now and the end of the season. Other than that, the game that I'd sort of have marked off on my calendar would be Liverpool West Ham for sure.
Yeah, I am going to say Liverpool West Ham. Liverpool are an 11 game winning streak in all competitions, coming off an amazing week, beating Chelsea in the Carabao Cup final and then advancing in the FA Cup quarterfinals with Minamino scoring a couple bangers. West Ham, I thought, you know, they closed the gap with an important win over Wolves last week, but then lost to Southampton midweek, where it was 1-1 for a while, but they just didn't make those pivotal plays. And I wonder, are they starting to tire a little bit? They also have to prepare for the Europa League, where they unluckily face Sevilla in the round of 16, which feels so unfair to West Ham given how well they had performed in the group stages in the Europa League. So I don't know. Liverpool are unbeaten at home this season. They've won their last four against West Ham at Anfield. This is really looking like one-way traffic. I love how Liverpool is playing right now, but I wanted to give a shout-out to West Ham that there's a possibility of them maybe getting the results if everybody's playing at the height of their potential, but it seems like we might see West Ham starting to trail off here.
Yeah, the only thing I would add is Norwich Brentford, two teams on a bit of a you know, Brentford are on a free fall similar to Leeds right now, and Norwich are just looking for any bit of hope. And obviously Watford playing against Arsenal this weekend, as well as Burnley against Chelsea. There's an opportunity there for one of them to make some sort of statement. So just one to keep an eye on if you're a fan of watching a game that's not going to be that exciting but has major implications.
It could be such a messy game with so much importance, because Norwich, they have a game in hand to Brentford. And to your point, they win that, they're 4 points behind Brentford. And we're only in March. I mean, it's going to be crazy. All right, we're going to take a break when we come back. First versus second in Serie A. Some MLS action, La Liga, and so much more. Weekend preview, Jimmy Conrad, Heath Pierce, Jonathan Johnson, LME. We'll be right back.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Taylor Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Taylor Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Taylor Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Taylor Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Taylor Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Taylor Brands.
You hear that? Your dog knows. Spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
2022 marks the 50th anniversary of Title IX and the Attacking Third podcast. It's celebrating the anniversary all of March for Women's History Month. Each Tuesday during March, host Lisa Roman and Sandra Herrera will chat with groundbreakers in women's sports, from Sam Mewis, Katrina Adams, and Amy Trask and Leslie Weiser. Listen to Attacking Third's Title IX Tuesdays on Apple Pod, Spotify, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. Welcome back, everybody. Serie A. By the way, for more action, for more preview action of the weekend Serie A matches, check out our pilot episode podcast of Calcio Corner. It's a new weekly live and interactive show dedicated to Serie A and Italian football with a cast of familiar faces from Paramount Plus's Serie A coverage. Each episode is going to be a feast of fiery opinions, fantastic insight, and overly dramatic hand gestures. Check out the world premiere on the Che Golazo podcast feed and the Che Golazo YouTube channel. Right, that's a lot of me talking. Let's go, Jimmy Conrad. Napoli against Milan. You're going to be there in the studio, as you mentioned earlier. How are you feeling about this one? This one is a sexy one. By the way, Des Norris, our producer, was telling me that in the 80s, I believe, I forgot the actual year, this was another crucial time. Maradona against Hulet, 87-88. And it basically determined the rest of the season. And this is kind of the same thing here. What do you think here? Napoli against AC Milan.
I'm excited to be able to go into the studio to talk about a match of this magnitude. As you just mentioned, I do or should say, that Inter Milan are playing Salernitana on Friday. They have a game in hand. So if they win that, then technically they go top at 58 points, these two on 57. That said, I do think that if there's a result in this one or victory either side, that really could propel either of these clubs to really legitimize their hopes and dreams of winning the Scudetto this season and really, you know, vying with Inter, who I think will be in the conversation till the very end for the title. And you got to hold off Juve as well. Now, the last time these two teams played was in Milan, and Napoli actually got the result. It was mid-December. It was 1-0. And what I find interesting about Milan is, and Olivier Giroud, I think, has been fantastic for them. No big surprise, you know, if you've watched Giroud at any point with any of the clubs he plays for. But his link-up play, I really think, is bringing other players into the game. So you got Brahim Diaz, who can now kind of join the attack a lot more and a lot more consistently. You have Rafael Leao, who I think is one of the best young players in Europe, when he gets going and allows, if Giroud can hold on to the ball and it brings in somebody else, he can release that ball over to Leao, who's in now in those advantageous 1v1 situations where he's so good. Now, I think there's still some frustration about his decision-making. Sometimes he shoots when he should pass and vice versa. But ultimately, he's so dynamic that I think that when he's healthy, Milan are a much different team. It might come down to defense. I mean, Napoli came back from a goal down against Lazio to win 2-1. They were up 2-1 or 2-0. Either way, they won that game 2-1, but they gave up a lot of chances to Lazio. And that's a bit surprising, because I think one of the hallmarks of Luciano Spalletti, the manager of Napoli in the beginning of the year, was how stout they were defensively. So if they can, either one of those teams can start to lock that in, then I think that's going to give them a really good chance to go on and get a result. But overall, I'd probably see a draw on this one.
all of that to be like, here's your cheese pizza. You know, we've got all these toppings, but you get a cheese pizza.
That's such a good metaphor.
I mean, the only thing I would say is that it took them to the 94th minute to win against Lazio. Napoli and Milan, they're sort of having to enter this, almost feels like, post Zlatan era, where they just don't have this consistency and know where they're going to get back, when they're going to get him back, and if they can rely upon him. And if you look over the last 18 months, there's been a huge reliance on when he's on the field. The team has to sort of play to his strengths and play to the way that he plays, and they get results out of that. It's similar to what we're seeing now with a lot of the aging stars, that they just take up a lot of attention and they can change the flow and the dynamic of the game. And now you're, as Jimmy mentioned with Giroud, it changes the dynamic of that team, but we've also seen some inconsistent performances from him in that one as well. Napoli crashing out of the Europa League, I think, changes the dynamic of their race or chase for a title that allows them to now focus on that Coppa Italia now out of that as well. And so I think this is a huge opportunity for them to cement their stake. Again, I want AC Milan to win this one for personal reasons, and I want to see AC Milan back at the top again. But I think Napoli are probably the favorites in this one. If Osimhen is fit and healthy, I know there was some concerns with him over the last couple of weeks of overuse and not feeling quite fully fit, but I do know he played over the last weekend. And so this is one that I'm going to go with a win for Napoli.
Yeah, it's a shame that we don't have all of the teams having played all of their games, because you look at Inter, who could find themselves 1 point ahead of Napoli and AC. You know, you've got Atalanta, who have a game in hand over Juve in that chase for the final Champions League berth. You have Fiorentina just outside of the European positions as well, with a game in hand, who, assuming they all win, you know, they're going to be bumped up, you know, a position or two. For me, I still feel like what I said a couple of weeks ago rings true with Napoli, where they almost adapt to, you know, their opponents. I feel like if their opponents can really put them, you know, under, you know, turn the screw on them quite early in the game, they can rise to that. But they're not necessarily going to look to dictate the tempo of the game at this moment in time. I think as well, when we're talking about AC Milan, you know, we mentioned sort of like the Zlatan factor and not having him. I think missing Simon Kjær at the back has been a huge loss for Milan over the last couple of months, and will continue to be so. But for me, I think that, you know, this is just such a huge opportunity for Napoli, you know, to strike a direct blow. I mean, this is a Napoli side that we were almost having to write out of the title race not that long ago because of how far they'd fallen after such a good start to the season. You know, so to see them sort of back at the top of the pile, even though there are games in hand to take into account, this is too big an opportunity for them to miss, I think.
Yeah, Milan have won, by the way, only one of the last 14 games against Napoli as well. So statistically, that helps them. But, you know, we will see. Maybe I'll take that cheese pizza and call it a draw, Jimmy.
I'm going 2-1 Napoli.
All right. Well, there you go.
Mine's a little bit of a pepperoni flavor.
Heath Pierce, quick on Roma Atalanta. As JJ mentioned, they had a game in hand. They can take some advantage here. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, Roma aren't in the worst of forms. They're not in the best of forms. They're kind of sitting right middle. And when I look at how that table plays out, they're just fighting for their lives with teams above them and below them. And the thing about Roma is they just don't seem to capitalize on the opportunities that they have. And earlier on in the season, they've got a decently favorable result for the rest of the year. And they're playing against an Atalanta side who, again, there's goals galore between both of these teams, but Atalanta side that haven't been at their best as well. This might be the one where I sit on the fence because on one hand, I see Kost Jimmy. I should have waited one game to go to sit on the fence because I'm right after Jimmy sitting on the fence. But yeah, I see this playing out as a draw. It's somewhat of a good result for both these teams considering the form that they're in and where they're trying to go.
I will say Atalanta against Sampdoria in their most recent game were fantastic. I mean, they're so devastating in transition. And when they get going and they get that confidence and they can find that link up player that allows them to kind of play up and then back and they can go through and they go with numbers, it's really hard to slow down. And my biggest fear as a Roma supporter is how that defense of Roma can really withstand that consistently throughout a game. And you know that Mourinho is going to pull up some plan there. He's going to be a little bit, you know, blocking the passing lanes, and it's going to be probably a choppy game. And we're going to hope Tammy Abraham can work some of his magic, which he's been doing pretty regularly throughout this particular season. They create a lot of chances too. It's another one of those that almost feels Rangnick-esque. And I maybe hate linking Manchester United with Mourinho at this point, but it's not like they don't create chances. You see Tammy Abraham getting good spots. Mkhitaryan gets in good spots. Veretu, any of their players get in good spots, Zaniolo, but can they finish those opportunities? And they haven't been doing that consistently. And that puts a lot of pressure on the defense to have to be perfect. And this is a defense that's not that great. So a draw would be great. I'd take a draw as a Roma supporter, especially because of how well Atalanta's playing. But I do want to throw out there, the last time these two teams played was in Bergamo and Roma beat them 4-1. They scored 4 goals on 5 shots. So on that particular day, they were taking their chances, but Atalanta, you can never sleep on them or their manager Gasperini.
Yeah, I take Jimmy's point, but I remember Gasperini kicking off about a few of the decisions in that game. So I think some people might debate that it was not necessarily the most reflective of the way that the game played out. But this is a game that Atalanta just cannot afford to lose. If you look at where they are in the table with that game in hand, they can't allow Roma to get back into that race when they're looking to still try and squeeze that Champions League spot away from Juventus. So, you know, I'd expect Atalanta to be really motivated for this one, and save some of their better form for it. And like I mentioned as well, you know, with Fiorentina breathing down both of their backs, neither team is going to want to drop any points and lose any ground in this race for Europe.
Well, I tell you what, if Atalanta win, they'll break that streak over Roma right now. Unbeaten in 6 consecutive games. The last time they did that was in 2020. So, you know, Mourinho, who won't be there, still serving a sideline suspension. Maybe that's why. I don't know. We'll see. But let's move on here and let's just do a quick tour around Europe, the rest of Europe, Spain, France, and Germany. I'll just mention some games going on and you just, you know, give me some thoughts from wherever you want to go. Real Betis against Atleti. Real Madrid against Sociedad. Bayern against Leverkusen. Armenia against Augsburg. And Nice against Paris Saint-Germain. Jonathan Johnson, I'm going to take a gamble here. Where do you want to go?
Well, you know what? I'm kind of torn. I mean, I'd love to talk about Betis Atleti because I was writing up one of the exclusive quotes that we had from Andres Guardado about this crucial run that Betis find themselves in at the moment. It'd be fantastic to see them in Champions League contention, but also, getting towards the latter stages of the Europa League, and now with the Copa del Rey as well. It's just a really exciting time to see, you know, what is happening with this Betis side under Manuel Pellegrini. And I mean, it's easy for me to say because I've had a soft spot for Betis for decades now, but you know, people underestimate how big a club this is, you know, how much affection there is for Betis, and I think that there's going to be a lot of people rooting for Betis to pull this off against an Atleti side that, I mean, although their form has picked up a little bit, you know, they're still not quite the, you know, the force that many people expected them to be this season. And it almost feels like it would kind of be a little bit of a crime, really, for them to get back into the Champions League race at Betis's expense, because obviously Betis losing to Sevilla in the Seville derby just last week. And, you know, they're kind of now in this risky position where almost everything that they've worked so hard for this season could fall away. I mean, I'll throw a little bit in on PSG Nice as well. You know, Nice, it's been a really impressive season for them under Christophe Galtier so far. You know, getting to a Coupe de France final, unexpectedly going up against Nantes instead of Monaco. Nantes winning the penalty shootout the other night, you know, which I think now really presents a fantastic opportunity for Galtier to get his hands on some silverware that, you know, he has not always that come that close to winning in his time in charge, certainly since PSG have been so dominant on the domestic front. So, you know, for him to be able to add a Coupe de France title just after last season's Ligue 1 title and have a very solid campaign with Nice, where they probably will end up qualifying for the Champions League, you know, I think that would be a very good return for his first season with Nice. And really with this game against PSG, it just depends on how motivated PSG are. We saw them fall behind against Saint-Etienne after having been spanked and embarrassed by Nantes the week before. So, you know, if they play the way they played in the second half against Saint-Etienne, you know, yeah, it's going to be a match worth watching. But otherwise, I'd expect Nice to show them up, really, if they perform anywhere like they have, you know, since that win over Real.
Yeah, Nice is nice, everybody. I'm going to use the easy joke there. I really,
Jimmy, the exit's also Galtier on the right. I think the exit's on the right.
I'm going to go
on my way, Jimmy. Come my way.
Now, I want to see this freight train known as Barcelona right now, this revitalized Barcelona. They're away to Elche. And Real Madrid versus La Real. Real Sociedad's going to be a great match as well. But I'm actually heading over to the Bundesliga in Germany, because Bayern Munich taking on Bayer Leverkusen is insane. Because Bayer Leverkusen in their last 10 games have scored 48 goals. Damn. They're averaging 4.8 goals a game in their last 10. That is insane. And we know that Bayern Munich likes to score.
It's Lewandowski numbers.
It really is. And we could have a potential like a 5-5 game here. And I just feel like that is worth watching. The reverse fixture, when they played earlier this season, Bayern won 5-1. And I don't know. I just feel like we're in for a barn burner of a game between Bayern and Bayer Leverkusen. So just wanted to let everybody know that one's going on.
I like
it. My final thought was just a follow-up in terms of those leagues on the Bayern Leverkusen, just because this is the two top scorers domestically in Europe right now. Patrick Schick, who is obviously the reason why Jesse Marsch got fired from RB Leipzig. he didn't get to have somebody who is a scorer like that while he was there, against Bobby Lewandowski, who's just been fantastic. And just for entertainment value alone, two top scorers, I think, across all of the top five leagues in Europe right now, going up against each other with Borussia Dortmund sitting right in the middle. And quite frankly, and maybe you guys feel differently, but the Holland train has gotten a little bit quieter over the last couple of months compared to what it was, and the scoring rate that he was on. To see Patrick Schick kind of step up into that position, I think is fantastic, and it should be a great game.
Absolutely. All right. Well, before final thoughts here, very quick on MLS, some fixtures on the screen as we had the opening weekend last weekend. Charlotte opening their beautiful stadium against LA Galaxy. Chicharito doing his thing. And, you know, the final moments of that game against NYCFC, of course. Chicago against Orlando City. Shaqiri, of course. LAFC, Carlos Vela, Charlie Candle with a hat trick last weekend against Portland, of course. Anything from those, Jimmy?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's a lot of great matchups. I mean, just after week one, I've learned that FC Cincinnati still suck ass, with all due respect to my pal Pat Noonan, who's the coach. LAFC, it's still riding or dying with Carlos Vela. When he's on and on fire, they're obviously going to be title contenders. When he's not, or if he's injured, I don't think they will be. I don't know what's going on with my former club, San Jose and Sporting Kansas City. Super sus defending, as the kids would say, sussy, suspect. Okay, but after seeing a lot of the first week performances, I think the Nashville one over Seattle, going to Seattle to get a result 1-0, really speaks to their title hopes. And I'm kind of curious to see how they're going to play this particular week against Minnesota, another big away game. Austin FC, big 5-0 win. Can they do it again against Inter Miami? And there's a lot of questions that still need to be answered. But, I'm kind of watching all of them. You know, anytime I can catch a game this weekend, because there's a lot of them going on, I'm going to do it, because I'm pretty excited about this upcoming season.
Yeah, for me, the closest thing is obviously Steve Cherundolo in a test now against Portland, a completely different side. Obviously, you expected Colorado to be great last week, and they started the season poorly, but now it's about creating a little bit of a run of form if you're LAFC to really test. You're not going to get Carlos Vela. In fact, Carlos Vela usually misses a third, pushing to a half of a season based on his health. And so you have to figure out other ways. Obviously, they've got Chicho Arango, who was a record-setting striker for the team last year, but trying to figure out what that best 11 is for them. And as Jimmy mentioned, Cincinnati, that's the one that I'm really worried about. And that leads me to Cincinnati being a newish team in the league, leads me to Charlotte and sort of where they're going to fall in. It's a lot of pressure now to become a new team in the league in terms of performances, right? We've seen how fan bases and fan culture and supporter culture starts to be sort of the new standard, and teams are getting it right. Charlotte has a huge fan base and a huge soccer fandom in their area, but it's all about the performance on the field. If the league wants to grow, you need to have these better teams sort of reach the heights of the LAFCs when they first came into the league. And so I've got my eye on them sort of not just this weekend, but sort of in their first season as well.
Isn't the attendance expected to be like super high for that game as well? I've been reading some like crazy figures.
Woo, baby.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing the festival of color that produces, and just glad really that my preseason tip of Chicago Fire is paying off for you guys. Nice juicy 0-0 to start off the season against Phil Neville's Inter Miami. So I think it's early days to be drawing too many conclusions, and I still think that they're definitely going to be a team to keep an eye on, and I'm curious to see how it all plays out, especially once you know Shaqiri can find his feet and you know get a bit of form back in those legs. But
You said you were worried about him because they let him go so easy from Lyon. This is guy, you know. Are we?
I want to know what Lyon had seen sort of from him over those first like 6 months to think like, right, we can do without this guy, because I think now he's got no choice but to be motivated and to play, because otherwise he's not going to be getting in Switzerland's squad for the World Cup. Right. He's going there, with a lot of expectation on his shoulders as well. He's going there to be the guy. So, you know, he's going to have to earn his money and look good in that pretty neat kit that they've got.
On the conclusion of a Chicago winter as well, you got to really give it up to him, by the way. Hey, young baseball fans, by the way, do you want some action? Come to MLS, baby. It's just aching for you. It's asking for you. Now that the first few series of your league is not happening, come to Major League Soccer. You never know. You might find a team right there. Let's go some final thoughts here. Heath, let's begin with you. Final thoughts as we say goodbye.
I mean, sometimes I get to this point of the show and I've run out of final thoughts.
Say something funny then, Heath. Anything else? Non-soccer.
X is on the right, Heath.
Yeah. No, I mean, you guys are just so funny that it's hard to really just deliver something this late in the show. You know,
Really... You're the one that came up with the cheese pizza thing. You win, I think.
No, I just for anybody that's watching this visually, I apologize for like a lot of wall you can see on my background. I had went out of town, came back, and everything fell off. So that's going to be where I put my time and effort in the next couple of days, is getting this studio back up and running again.
Well, let's hope so, my friend Jimmy.
I will see everybody on Paramount Plus for Serie A.
Yeah, we know you're going to be in the studio, Jimmy. I know. My God.
I might shave and brush my teeth. It's going to be awesome.
Well, safe flight, my friend. Jonathan Judson.
Guys, been a pleasure being with you as always. I mean, I guess to finish on something interesting, given that we've done the cheese pizza analogy, why don't we all give our favorite pizza topping something different?
Oh, I like it. All right. What's your favorite, Jonathan?
Mine, it has to be some sort of like spicy meat / sausage. So like ideally like a spicy pepperoni pizza, maybe with some peppers on it as well.
Okay. All right, Jimmy.
Well, as you know, I like the draw, so I'm a cheese pizza lover, everybody. I love the cheese.
Yeah, that's not a topping though. You can't have pizza without the cheese, Jimmy. That's like
extra cheese.
That's the base.
It's just like the base that you buy in the supermarket.
Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna go with I do like JJ's sort of spicy pepperoni, because and you can get that more often, I think, in Europe. I used to get a pizza from Pizza Hut once in a while. Or twice a week when I was playing in the Bundesliga, even though you're not supposed to have that from Pizza Hut, no free ads. But it had this spicy pepperoni that I couldn't get in the States, and it was delicious. But because of that, I'm going to go with green chilies. You can't get green chilies, but a lot of places, some places around the world, you get green chilies.
That's your favorite?
Yeah. Well, just I like spice on it. And when you get the green, like the actual little tiny green chilies that make it real spicy, I wouldn't do it all the time, but whenever I get a pizza like that, it's phenomenal.
All right. Okay. Well, listen, pepperoni or sausage are clearly the leaders, but I'm going to tell you something. In Peru, Hawaiian pizza is very popular.
Okay? I'm just that, though.
I'm just saying that it's.
Are you reporting? Are you reporting the news right now? Or are you taking a stance on this?
Pineapple.
Yeah.
Live pineapple from Lima. Yeah. Peruvians love Hawaiian.
Yeah. You, anyway. You know what's equally controversial? I don't hate it.
Yeah, Jonathan Johnson.
I don't either.
Thank you. Thank you, Jimmy. Yeah, Heath, you and your green chilies.
Although you can change the ham for a bit of bacon and then you're onto a winner.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Too good. All right. Well, listen, I'm trying to lose some weight this month, so there's no way I can do that. But live from Lima, Peruvians like some Hawaiian. And here we go. That's the end of our weekend preview. Jimmy Conrad, thank you so much. Honestly, have a safe flight and can't wait to watch you on Serie A coverage. Have a safe flight, buddy.
Thank you very much.
Heath Pierce, I hope you arrange your wall the right way.
Thanks. Appreciate you guys having me.
Jonathan Johnson, up the villa.
Pleasure as always. Indeed, up the villa and see you guys very soon.
Absolutely. Thank you, everybody. Qué Golazo Pod on Twitter, John_Legosa, Jimmy Conrad, Heath Pierce, Instagram, Twitter. Well, of course, we're on YouTube. Pods, help us get to 10,000 by the time Champions League comes back next week. We will see you next time. Have a great, great weekend. Till then.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.